Welcome back. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Zoe McLennan, and welcome to the first episode of the Climate Change Report, where we discuss everything related to climate change. Today, we're going to start off by dispelling some myths related to climate change and provide a quick primer on the issue. I thought the best person to talk to you guys about climate change as a primer would be the person who gave me my primer as a child in climate change. So my father, Donald McLennan, who is the head of monitoring science at the Canadian High Arctic Research Station here in Canada. So we're going to have a little introduction to climate change and the first myth, and it's going to be really good. So hello, Donald.
Hello, Zoe.
How are you doing this morning?
Well, it's early. I'm in Winnipeg, so I'm an hour earlier than you, but I guess you guys are used to getting up early there. I hope my brain is working.
That's what I think of every Monday. So yeah, we're going to start off this interview by dispelling a few misconceptions and myths about climate change. So one of the things I noticed a lot in even the media and among friends even is that lots of people use the terms climate change and global warming interchangeably. Would you like to talk about that a bit? Is it the same? Is it different? What do you think?
That's a good place to start, Zoe, because I think these are two terms that are mixed up, and it's very simple actually to sort them out. And it's important when you're reading any kind of literature or anything about climate change. I've seen them confused as well in media reports. So, very simply, global warming is the heating of the atmosphere. So, the average global increase in surface temperature. We usually express this as the mean annual temperature of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So this is an important concept, and we'll get into more of the other ideas as we go along. But the International Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, if I can use that acronym for this talk.
Go for it.
The IPCC has recently set a target of 2 degrees centigrade, so let's not make it 2 degrees centigrade warmer than it is now, or that it was in industrial time, actually. They look back about 100 years. So global warming, the average annual increase in surface temperature of the planet, whereas climate change are the changes to climate at any place in the Earth or the Earth overall that are brought about by this increase in temperature. So one is global warming, the warming of the Earth. Climate change are the changes that are brought about in climate at any one place as a result of the warming of the atmosphere, as a result of global warming. And climate change is complex and extremely difficult to try and predict.
All right.
Global warming is reasonably easy to measure.
Okay, so speaking of global warming, let's start off with that. How does global warming occur exactly?
Well, global warming occurs in various ways, but the one I think we want to concentrate on here is the role of the carbon dioxide molecule and other what we call greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. So as solar radiation reaches the surface of the Earth, it's often re-radiated back into space, or it's intercepted by molecules that have the ability to absorb heat and then re-radiate it. So rather than have this energy reflected back into space or re-radiated back into space, it's captured in the atmosphere. So that is why we call them greenhouse gases, because it has the same role as a greenhouse, where the sun's radiation goes into a greenhouse and can't escape and is trapped in there. So we call them GHGs, or greenhouse gases. And there are other ones. Methane is a particularly nasty greenhouse gas. It has 24 times the capacity on a molecule basis to trap heat. Water vapor in the form of clouds, also very important. Nitrous oxide are other examples of greenhouse gases. So as we add more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, we increase the ability of these greenhouse gases to absorb and retain heat. And we heat up the atmosphere compared to what we would if we weren't putting this carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So we've measured an increase of about 0.74 degrees centigrade since the industrial age across in global warming across the planet over the last, say, 100 years.
Okay. And is that a large amount on the human scale?
You know, it's interesting. It doesn't sound like a lot, and even to me it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is responsible for a lot of the changes that we're already seeing. in climates across the world. So, yes, it is a big deal. And even getting up to 1°C is a big deal. The other thing we need to think about is that carbon dioxide has a, you know, can be 30 to 90 year residence time in the atmosphere, any particular molecule that's put in. So although we're up to 0.74°C right now, we've already put in enough carbon to be over 1°C, that is 1 degree centigrade increase in the average global temperature. And that's a lot. I know it doesn't seem like a lot, but it is a lot, and it has potential to have considerable effects on the climate.
Okay, and speaking of these considerable effects, we're going to go back to climate change now. Does global warming have an inherent link to climate change? Does it affect it?
Yeah, as you warm the atmosphere, you get a complicated and very difficult to predict changes in climate at any one place on the planet. There are some big unknowns. It's a big atmosphere. People use mathematical models to try and predict things, but it's inherently quite difficult in terms of understanding what the actual change in climate is going to be. So, but direct examples we've seen already, I think we can link directly to climate change. An obvious one is many more hot summer days in Montreal. That has been recorded in Canadian cities and around the world. And in some places, this has been debilitating and resulting in a certain number of deaths per capita. Stronger and more frequent storms. I think if you ask the insurance industry, it's really interesting because the industry and business has been slow to take up the reality of climate change in many cases. But if you look at insurance claims as the result of major storms like typhoons, hurricanes, tornadoes, they track climate. They track the concentration of the increase in concentration of carbon in the atmosphere very closely. So stronger, more frequent storms. We know our glaciers are melting in the mountains, in the Rocky Mountains, in the Eastern Mountains, in the Canadian Arctic Mountains, and they're disappearing around the world. In the land where I work, we see Arctic sea ice melting. So those are the direct examples. But there are also indirect examples that are harder to understand and predict. So, for example, if we have more heat in the atmosphere, then it causes more convection. That is the upwelling of air and an unsettled atmosphere. And that results in more clouds and more water vapor, which in turn, as we know, water vapor is a greenhouse gas. So you get these feedbacks that occur that often make it really complicated to understand what the effects of climate change will be as a result of global warming. But very much, it's very much here and it's very much happening.
Okay. And you already touched on this a little bit before, but you talked about how some of the greenhouse gases are methane and water vapor versus carbon dioxide. And what do you think the levels of each are? Which one is causing more of an effect right now or in the future?
Well, at this point, there's no doubt that carbon dioxide is the one that we need to be watching and the one that we can do something about. So that's the one we've been tracking. Methane is a tricky one, and there have been some dire predictions. Scientists are always skeptical about dire predictions, but there are large quantities of methane, for example, under the seafloor in the Arctic Ocean that are frozen in permafrost. Okay. And at times they will burst to the surface in big bubbles as the permafrost itself is degrading as a result of warming sea temperatures. And so large bubbles of methane get put into the atmosphere. There's quite a large quantity of these. Some nations like Japan have looked at it as a source of heating gas, which would be a better use of it than having it bubble directly into the atmosphere. So carbon dioxide is a key one, but things like methane are big unknowns that we don't really understand at this time.
Okay. And you work in the Arctic. Several months a year, and what do you do up there, and what are the effects do you see in the Arctic as a direct result of climate change?
The Arctic, I talked about feedbacks, and indirect effects of climate or of global warming on climate change. And in the Arctic, we are experiencing a feedback as the result of the disappearance of sea ice, the Arctic sea ice. And this is a permanent cover of ice on the Arctic Ocean that has been there certainly for hundreds of thousands of years. And what is happening is that as the sea ice melts in the summer, it allows more heat to be absorbed by the ocean. So normally you have a white surface, and the sun's radiation is reflected directly back into space. So it acts as a refrigerator, in a sense, for the whole planet. What's happening now is because of huge increases in the amount of Arctic sea ice melt, that heat is being absorbed and not reflected back into the atmosphere. So as a result of that and some other factors, the Arctic is warming at 2 to 3 times the rate of southern latitudes, and we're seeing that in those at this point in time, we're seeing that in those things that react directly to temperature. We talk about something called the cryosphere, and the cryosphere is any part of the Earth that is frozen for any part of time. So, sea ice, lake ice, areas affected by snow, permafrost, we call that cryosphere. And the Arctic cryosphere is being directly impacted by warming. I talked about Arctic sea ice. Mm-hmm. The Arctic sea ice is a platform for an entire ecosystem of what we call ice-dependent ecosystems. So there are algae that are actually live in the ice that support the production of zooplankton, which are eaten by small invertebrates, which are eaten by small fish, which are eaten by big fish, which are consumed by seals, which are consumed by polar bears. Walrus use it as a platform. So this Arctic sea ice ecosystem is one that is quite threatened by these changes in the reduction of sea ice. So around Alaska, we see walrus, instead of hauling out on sea ice platform because they need to stay over the areas where they feed, mm-hmm. they haul out on shore instead where they're much less comfortable and much less ideal substrate for them. We see the length of the snow season is tracking that of the reduction in sea ice, and snow is a really important factor in the Arctic. And the other is permafrost. So permafrost is that portion of the ground that is permanently frozen. And so the upper layer of soil in the Arctic thaws. We call that the active layer. And that is thawing more deeply, and permafrost is melting and warming and melting. And this is resulting in major thaws and slumps. We see huge areas slumping into streams and lakes, mm-hmm. The shorelines of lakes melting more rapidly, soft shorelines of the ocean retreating very, very quickly, which is affecting coastal communities and ecosystems. Okay. Another one of our unknowns, a potential climate bombs, as we say, is permafrost itself. There's enough carbon frozen in permafrost to double the amount of carbon that's in the atmosphere if it was all released tomorrow. Now, it's not all going to be released tomorrow, and that's one of the things we're studying in the North, and many other scientists are studying as well. In terms of biota, that is the animals, things happen much more slowly when it comes to animals, plants and animals, because of this sort of inertia that's built into the system. It's hard for trees to move. Tree line would be probably 100 kilometers north of where it is today if it reflected climate. But trees have to seed and grow. So that happens very, very slowly. The one big change we're seeing is changes in the amount of shrub vegetation, which is having considerable effects. And also some animals like moose, for example, have been shown to be moving north, red fox, this sort of thing.
Is that going to have a really large effect on ecosystems if northern animals are moving south and southern animals are moving north?
Well, there's no more northern mammals moving south, but there's lots of animals moving from south to north. Absolutely, that's the trend. And some of the models have talked about in Canada's north, in the southern part of the Arctic, north of tree line, 100% turnover in species composition in the next 100 years. Wow. Now, that's really 100% turnover in the climates and the habitats for these animals. when in fact that's not what's going to happen. It's going to be a mess, basically. Those species that can move, like songbirds, they'll be able to move, but will they find habitat? You know, things like frogs and amphibians and other things that move and need wetland connectivity in that. How fast will they go? We don't know. Which is why I'll put a plug in for monitoring. I'm a monitoring scientist, and we're setting up a program at the Canadian High Arctic Research Station to actually monitor the change as it is occurring to try and help decision makers, governments, communities, to provide them with information so they can make better decisions about adaptation.
Good. Okay. And yeah, last question. Listening to all this, do you think, as a personal opinion, do you think it's too late? Is this irreversible? And also, what are governments doing to reverse or slow the effects of climate change?
Well, it's too late in the sense that climate change is already happening. So we can't undo what is already happening. So it's too late in the sense that global warming is occurring and it's the result of anthropogenic emissions. But it's certainly not too late to act. Quite the opposite. It is time to act. And in terms of what is happening, I think there's some promising some of the recent climate change meetings we've seen. In 2009, governments set a cap of 2C to not exceed 2 degrees centigrade warming of the atmosphere. Sometimes scientists think that that is too high and that a 2 degrees centigrade world will not be a good world for our grandchildren. So I think the United States under Obama is really making it a legacy issue, and Canada has tied its policies to the United States. Mm-hmm. The recent Three Amigos, if you've been reading the paper, talked about doing something about that as a group. But Canada is a very small emitter in terms of global. The United States, China, India, the European Union, these are the big emitters. Probably 80% of the emissions come from those sources. But we need to support them, and it's really important that we act now. And as a nation that has benefited you and I from the wealth that we've generated by burning fossil fuels, essentially, I really see it as a moral obligation for us to act and to be leaders in leading on emissions reduction. So in terms of what to do, I've got 4 points here, I think, that are, we need to start reducing our emissions immediately. And it's, what's interesting, if we started reducing emissions tomorrow, which we are beginning to do, we would need a 6% reduction annually to stay below 2 degrees centigrade. If we had started in 2013, that would have been a 3.5% annually. So it's critical that we start immediately, and there's some indication that we are doing that. Personally, and I'm no expert in that area, I think a carbon tax is the way to go because it puts carbon on the same footing as other alternate fuels, and in terms of its costs, because mm-hmm. we never measure the actual cost to the planet of some of these things. We need to support research and development for alternate energy sources like solar, wind, and geothermal. I think that's really important. And if I was a student at McGill today, I think I'd be looking into those fields as very promising for the future. Likewise, sequestration is the capturing of carbon. So when trees grow, they capture carbon. They're made of carbon. So afforestation, different kinds of farming methods. And there are direct sequestration projects that are going on as well, trying to actually take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere mechanically. So sequestration, most people think, is going to be necessary if we're going to meet that 2C target. And I'm going to have a final plug for monitoring networks. We don't know. We have to adapt. So the first three are what we call mitigation, that is carbon reductions into the atmosphere. But the last is adaptation. The changes are inevitable that are going to happen over the next 50 to 100 years. Well, starting now, but accelerating. So we need to be able to monitor that change so we understand the complexities of it so we can make better decisions in terms of climate adaptation. So that's my final pitch for the program that I'm involved in.
And that's the Canadian head of monitoring at the Canadian High Arctic Research Station, right?
That's correct. And working, of course, with scientists and with Native communities, Indigenous communities across the entire North, we are working to are beginning to develop a system and a program to understand change in one of the most rapidly changing areas on the planet.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Very informative. We've dispelled some myths on climate change versus global warming. We've discussed how does global warming occur and the future of our planet with climate change as a factor here today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye, Zoe.
Bye. So we just talked to Donald McLennan, the head of monitoring science at the Canadian High Arctic Research Station. This was episode one of our climate change report. Just a reminder that this is in collaboration with Divest McGill. We are taking the more sciencey side. They are taking the more climate justice side. They're going to be with us maybe once every 6 weeks, and they're going to be updating us on what they're doing here at McGill to try and get McGill to divest from fossil fuels. So yeah, we're going to play another song for you guys, and then we'll be back in a bit. Bye.